Hi, everybody. Welcome. So glad you're joining us today. I'm Isha Rahman, and I'm Vice President of Advocacy and Partnerships at the Vera Institute of Justice. And we're really looking forward to this conversation today about what voters are taking to the ballot box on crime and safety, and unpacking some of the conventional wisdom of how crime plays out in the political debate and on the campaign trail. And we're really lucky to be joined in this conversation by two of the most prominent researchers and pollsters on this issue, Anna Greenberg from GQR and Celinda Lake from Lake Research Partners. Welcome, Celinda, Anna. Thanks so much for having this conversation with us. So I just want to take a few minutes to just set the table on this issue. I mean, what we know is that crime for politicians is an especially tricky issue to get right. Historically, American voters have given poor marks to either party, both Republicans and Democrats, on their handling of crime and safety. Every generic poll that we see on this issue places Republicans ahead somewhere between 10 to 15 percentage points than Democrats in terms of voter confidence in how they handle issues of crime and safety. But both parties are underwater. They break maybe 45% at most, but neither party breaks 50%. And what we know about crime, especially during campaign season and on the election cycle, is it's an issue that is talked about in ways that are often weaponized, that don't actually get to real solutions around preventing crime and delivering safety, but in fact, in the form of attacks of being soft on crime or sort of bona fides around I too am tough on crime, which what we're here to do is have a conversation of how much that particular approach to handling issues of crime and safety actually resonates with voters. What are we seeing from public opinion research and polling? And what lessons do we have learned from recent election cycles in which crime has been a huge issue? And what does that mean leading up to 2024? What we know about crime is that it rarely ranks as the top voting issue for voters. It usually lags somewhere sort of in the second tier behind the economy, inflation, recently abortion and democracy. But what we do know is that when it is a big deal for voters, it certainly can motivate vote choice. And what we've seen in several rounds of research of our own is that crime is an especially potent issue, an important issue for Black voters, Latino and Hispanic voters, key voters in the Democratic base. Just today, there was an Ipsos Axios poll released that showed that Latino voters are increasingly moving away from the Democratic Party, and crime is one of the issues that they say they don't actually think Democrats do this well. So we're going to have this conversation about crime in the context of the election cycle and politics, but it's really important to start any conversation about crime by saying safety matters. It's not just a political issue, but it matters to every person. And everyone deserves to be safe, no matter where they live, how they vote, the color of their skin, how much money is in their pocket. And what we know since 2020 is two key trends have occurred. The first is there is indeed and has been a rise in certain kinds of crime, and that rise in crime has happened across the country in big cities, suburban communities, more urban parts of the country as well. And while we're starting to see in 2023 some of the peaks of homicides and shootings come down, it's still above the levels in this country in 2019. And so some of that is driving voter concern, certainly about issues of crime and safety in recent election cycles and undoubtedly in 2024. The other trend that we've seen since 2020 is that politicians on the campaign trail and off have been talking about crime more. And just last year in the midterm election season, we saw about $157 million spent on ads about crime, mostly by GOP politicians attacking Democrats for being, quote unquote, soft on crime. So what we know is right now, Americans are more concerned about crime and safety than they have been at any time in the past two decades, according to Gallup's poll that tests voter sentiment on this issue year after year. And voters are more dissatisfied with both parties' handling of crime and safety than they have been in two decades as well. So this gets to what the sort of response is. And the conventional wisdom is that if voters are worried about crime, politicians react by getting tough on crime, increasing their rhetoric around tough on crime and policies that are tough on crime. And so I'm really looking forward to unpacking what that looks like in the election cycle, what we saw in 2022, and what that means for 2024. whether the Willie Horton style attacks work and why we think they do or they don't. And what I also want us to get into is some of the races that are a lot less high profile than the ones that got covered a lot in 2022. And the ones that got covered the most are essentially two. One is Chesa Boudin, the San Francisco DA. The recall in June of 2022 was widely covered as a death knell for the progressive prosecutor movement and for criminal justice reform and a sort of reversion back to tough on crime. The other were the House races in New York, the midterm election cycle, where bail reform and crime was a key issue on the campaign trail. But what we've also seen, in which Anna and Celinda will talk a lot about, is many other races in which we saw issues of crime and safety come up, and they actually played out in a different way. For example, Karen Bass's election in LA or John Fetterman in Pennsylvania. This year, we've seen some high profile mayoral elections where crime and public safety is a huge issue in Chicago and Philadelphia. Just saw some DA races this week in Virginia that had perhaps an unexpected result. We will touch upon all of those and try and make meaning of how this issue plays in the ballot box and what we can look to for 2024. So, first of all, I'd love to start, and Celinda, I'll ask you to chime in first. Let's go back to last year's midterm election cycle. And as I said, about $157 million were spent just during that election season alone on attack ads on crime. And the political chatter, if you put yourself back in September and October of 2022, it was that there would be a red wave, and it would be because of Democrats and their handling of crime and safety. And as we all know, the red wave didn't quite materialize on November 8th, 2022. And it looks like actually the conventional wisdom that those soft on crime attacks are potent didn't play out as well overall. And so tell us, like, what do you think was going on there? What was going on for voters? What actually happened that both the red wave and the crime attacks didn't materialize as expected?
First of all, we saw that I think the Democrats were quite effective and aided and abetted by some of the most disappointing decisions of our lifetime, but we're very able in terms of setting the agenda and setting the contrast. So the first thing about conventional wisdom, and I love conventional wisdom because it's wrong about 95% of the time, plus or minus 5% in our business, as we say. But the assumption is that if the crime issue is raised, it is automatically the number one issue that voters vote. And that's simply not true. It depends on the office. It depends on the circumstances. It depends on what you're doing to set the agenda. And I think the Democrats were quite effective in setting the agenda around the democracy issues and certainly around abortion. And we were effective in using that to mobilize voters. And we were effective in using that to draw very, very vivid contrasts, aided and abetted by Republicans going on the record in both cases defending January 6th insurgents and saying incredible things like, I know of no medical diagnosis that requires an abortion. And when a Republican congressperson gets their medical degree, that'll be interesting to hear their opinion. So people really rejected even raising the crime issue. And it wasn't the number one issue. It wasn't even the number one values issue. The number one values issue out there, because character and values determine elections as much as issue positions do, was abortion, and it made a huge difference. And of course, it's one of the things, fast forward to 2024, we're already seeing it surge in the data in terms of being as important as it was before. So the first lesson out of the midterms is it is not a foregone conclusion that if someone raises crime or accuses you of defund, that's the number one issue out there. Even if they spend money behind it, it's not necessarily the number one character issue. And Democrats are at a disadvantage on that issue. But the lesson, I think, of the 2023 races is that there are lots of answers. You don't have to hide. You can lean in here. And in mayoral elections and prosecutorial races, as you said, Incha, these are races where crime is featuring very prominently in voters' minds as something that their elected officials should do something about. They don't necessarily think their congressperson or their senator should solve the crime problem, or even their president. And what we are seeing is there are very, very strong answers for a 360-degree approach, a prevention approach, a safety approach, a root cause approach over just a tough-on-crime approach. But let me turn it to Anna for the rest of the story.
Yeah, thanks, Celinda. And I would love to get into what you said about like what is the right messaging when it does come up and in which races crime mm-hmm. actually does feature large. But Anna, I would love to get your take on what sure. happened in the 2022 elections. And you actually were the lead pollster in some races where crime featured quite heavily.
Sure. Couple things about it. I mean, Celinda is absolutely right that if you ask people kind of what's the most important issue in the 2022 election, inflation, immigration, abortion, democracy, depending on who you're voting for, were sort of the top issues, and that crime was third, fourth, fifth, sixth. And generally, it was Republicans who are more likely than Democrats to say that crime was their number one issue, to the extent that some of them did. Which isn't to say that lots of communities don't have legitimate concerns about crime. And as Insha noted at the outset, that crime has increased, and we can talk about why on a different call, but it has, and people have legitimate concerns about safety. So why is there this sort of disconnect around people's concerns about safety and crime as a political issue? Well, the first thing to say is that what I found in my research is that people had a more nuanced view about crime than the kind of Republican attack ads would lead you to believe. And so when you asked, you know, and most of my focus groups throughout 2022 are with swing, you know, quote unquote swing voters. But, you know, they sort of understand that poverty, a failing educational system are at least in part responsible, you know, for crime. A huge number of people, especially Black voters, think the proliferation of guns is a driver of violent crime, right? And that, you know, one of the things we know, for example, is that in the South, where gun laws are much looser, we actually have a higher murder rate than we do in cities. That's not exactly how, and I'll say something about that, how that gets talked about. But, you know, the role of guns is huge, especially for communities of color. And so that when you have, you know, Republican attack ads on crime that say Democrats defund the police and that's why there's crime, a lot of voters just sort of know that that's not the whole story. Some people may think there's an issue around supporting police, but it's certainly not the whole story for most people. And where that played out, I think most dramatically for me in the races that I worked on was the New Mexico governor's race. I work with Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham. And as you may or may not know, you know, New Mexico is a place with a fairly high crime rate, especially Albuquerque. And that's been true for a very long time. It's not just a post-COVID, pre-COVID, everybody, there's a huge issue with car theft. Like everyone gets their car stolen at least once in Albuquerque. And so when you talk to, you know, voters in New Mexico, they very much understand that the economic situation in New Mexico, it's a very poor state. It's got a, you know, education system is getting better, but, you know, real problematic disinvestment in public education. They really see that as kind of the root of crime, you know, more than anything else. And so when you have an attack ad against Governor Lujan Grisham that says crime is the way it is in New Mexico because of what she did around policing, it's just not plausible to people. And we saw this in real time. I believe that there were probably more ads run on crime against the governor than any other race in the country. I think it was about 25 to 30 ads on crime. Our campaign responded with about 4 ads. What was really interesting is that throughout the cycle, it didn't affect her favorability rating, her job approval, her vote share. It didn't come up in open ends. It did not come up in focus groups. It was sort of remarkable. I'm like, how can people not be talking about crime when that's the only thing they're saying about Michelle Lujan Grisham? It just had no effect on the race. And I think you can look at Fetterman and some other places where people really thought, and I think pre-election, that these were really, really brutal. I want to say one final thing about it. We have to understand that when Republicans talk about crime, they're not really talking about crime. Most of these ads are dog whistle ads that try to tap into racial animus. And that's why it's always about, you know, urban settings. Violent crime in urban settings, which many, many people don't live in those urban settings. They live outside of those urban settings. And often the people who are most concerned with crime were not people who lived in the areas with the highest crime rate. You know, you've got a lot of white Republicans who would express higher concerns about safety, even though we know that much less likely to live in places with high crime rates, notwithstanding the South. And so, you know, we just should be honest about what these crime ads are about. They're not policy debates, right? They are the latest dog whistle in the Republican arsenal.
I think that is such a good point about what are those ads about, and they're not about real solutions for preventing crime or delivering safety. They scan as scare tactics, and that's exactly right. One thing we've seen from the research, though, is that, and this might be driving why Republicans do slightly better than Democrats in terms of voter confidence on their handling of crime. Again, voters aren't satisfied with either party. But one thing that's clear is that there is a brand associated with Republicans, and we've used the phrase tough on crime a lot already in these first 20 minutes. And that's what Republicans are associated with when it comes to crime and safety. Law and order is the other. And Democrats, at least from what we've seen of the research, voters don't quite know what Democrats stand for when it comes to issues of crime and safety. There's no nice and tight sort of tagline or branding in that way. And I'm curious, though, because what I heard from both of you is maybe that's true, but still the sort of tough on crime attacks, they've lost their potency. What is it about voters in this country from Willie Horton in 1988, where it felt like those tough on crime sort of that rhetoric was incredibly potent, and to why we think it's lost some of its potency? Anna, you talked about the dog whistle, and I think that that's right. Mm-hmm. We as a country think about race more differently than we did 20, 30 years ago. But I wonder too, if it has to do with what voters say they want in terms of their solutions around crime and safety.
Sure. I mean, I think it's, you know, you have to go back to 1994 and the crime bill, where the crime bill was sort of blamed for the massive losses, particularly in the House, but the House and Senate during the Clinton administration. And there was a real reluctance, both because of that bill, because of the assault weapon ban, for Democrats to talk about crime or to talk about guns. And that sort of chilling effect was actually, you know, it lasted a long time, right? And you rarely heard Democrats talk about crime. And then, you know, in combination with that, you know, the crime rate in the 90s and then the early aughts went way down. I mean, so those of us who are old enough to remember the 80s and 90s and living in like New York City, it was a very different, and obviously a higher crime rate than we have now in New York City. And so I think the combination of both this fear among Democrats around talking about the issue and talking about guns, and then also the fact that the crime rate just went down massively in this country, it kind of was a simmering back burner. It doesn't mean that racial dog whistle wasn't, it just manifested in other ways. Right, in the Republican advertising. And I think that that sort of dog whistle around crime really kind of reemerged in part because of an exploitation, a sense of an exploitation or opening because of the Black Lives Matter movement, right? And so the Republicans looked at that as an opportunity to reframe a movement around justice and respect and issues of bias in policing, which are real, to sort of reconfigure it as around lawlessness and that sort of thing. And so I think that coming into the 2022 election, that's very much, and then you have obviously the surge in crime post COVID. But what I think actually was that a lot of Democrats did actually talk about crime, and they talked about it in the nuanced way that voters tend to think about it. Voters think you can both have accountability within policing and also a focus on public safety. And the focus on public safety, you know, for many people does include some ways around being tough on crime, but it also equally includes mental health services, social services, diversion, reforming the juvenile justice system so you don't put kids into the system. It's a whole set of other things besides just increasing penalties or, you know, whatever, dealing with bail. And so part of the reason why I believe, even though if you look at the advertising, the crime ads were much more likely to come from the Republicans and Democrats actually did talk about crime. And they often talked about it in that nuanced way. And so you can look at the Chicago mayor's race as an example where Freda Johnson had a pretty nuanced way of talking about crime. And in the research that we did for Vera Action, you know, just suggested that he was able to both neutralize, but also tap into voter sentiment, neutralize the simplistic notion of kind of this is just black and white, you're either pro or anti, you know, caring about public safety or crime, to one that had a lot of nuance, and he was able to win. And we saw that in other races across the country. And we also saw it in federal races where Democrats actually talked about crime in the races. So I think that, you know, I actually think Democrats have a good message on crime. Mm-hmm. And I think part of it is sort of convincing folks to not be scared, engage on it, and understand that voters have a fairly nuanced view of it. And that if racial animus is driving voter choice, however that is delivered to voters is something that Democrats, you know, if that's the kind of voter you are, then that's not someone who's going to vote for a Democrat. So don't be scared of the issue, because there's a set of people in the middle, right, who actually mm-hmm. share this kind of nuanced view of crime.
Yeah. And when you're talking about like, don't be scared, and it's really politicians, Democratic
yes.
candidates and electeds to not be afraid of the issue or duck. And that's such a really nice setup to, Celinda, I'd love to talk to you about some of the races, and especially this year. And I'll just name to your point, Anna, that there were some Democrats running who absolutely owned. I too am the safety candidate. John Fetterman in Pennsylvania is an excellent example of that. On the campaign trail, over $10 million was spent calling him soft on crime. You saw ads in Philadelphia, big billboards that said Fetterman equals poverty and crime. And yet on the campaign trail, he owned the issue of we can have safety and justice. And if you look at the exit polls in Pennsylvania after the midterm elections, 11% of Pennsylvania voters said crime's my top voting issue. 51-49, they voted for Fetterman over Oz. So Fetterman owned the issue, and it turns out it neutralized and inoculated the crime liability that Democrats often think that they have on the campaign trail. So, Celinda, I want to turn to you. Anna mentioned Chicago, and you did a lot of polling on the Chicago mayoral race. How did crime play out in that race? What did we see? What were the dynamics? And we'd love to hear from you, like, why did Brandon Johnson win despite the huge concerns Chicago voters had about crime?
Yeah, and we were very excited to be Brandon Johnson's pollster. And that was a very tight race. And it's, to set the context a little bit, crime was a big concern in the city. And we were badly outspent, including attack ads from the candidate and from the independent expenditure against us on crime. So I think there were three keys. Number one, Brandon Johnson responded right away. He did not let crime get him off his message, and his message was education, but he related that message to public safety. And he had a very, very strong response on crime that included, and safety. It included a prevention perspective. And in every race we've seen, the prevention perspective, including a police accountability, including support for police, but also talking about the things that Anna outlined, guns, which was the number one issue in Chicago, actually. Violence intervention, which is very strong in Chicago, mental health, investing in the long term in education and jobs. Every place we've been, that message has beat in 2023, the tough on crime message when it's been utilized. And that's been everywhere from Lincoln, Nebraska, to Jacksonville, Florida, to Chicago, to Philadelphia, to Allegheny County, across the board. That has been true. The second piece is, not only is there a racism dog whistle here, but there is also a dog whistle around toughness. So it's not accidental that they're saying tough on crime. You know, often Democrats lose not because they are too liberal, but because they are perceived to be too weak. And I think John Fetterman is the poster candidate for showing that Democrats can be tough and strong. And Brandon Johnson said, I'm going to be tough on crime and I'm going to be tough on the roots of crime. And really took that strength dimension back and answered it directly. Didn't duck, didn't hide, didn't become his opponent light, but answered this very directly. It is also very interesting, while many of these races, people supported their police, in all of these races, the FOP endorsed candidate lost. And people have very mixed views about the FOP because they know they take only one approach and not a 360-degree view. And people are really, really strong about wanting to deal with the causes of crime, the root causes of crime, and make some long-term changes. And they think they've heard this quote-unquote tough-on-crime rhetoric for decades, and it's not making the types of long-term changes that people want to see. The investment in jobs, the investment in violence intervention, the investment in mental health, which is really dominant, the getting guns off the street, investment in education, which Brandon Johnson was very articulate about, supported by the teachers, a classroom teacher himself, someone who said, I've been on the front lines of inner city schools. I've seen the guns in schools firsthand. So I think there's address the issue, there's take the 360 degree view and note that prevention has beat tough on crime in every single case that's been put up there and some money has been spent. And in all of these cases, the tough on crime message has outspent the prevention, the root causes of crime message, and we've still won these races.
So, Celinda, you mentioned Philadelphia, and Sherelle Parker just won last month, and she was at least covered by the media as the more sort of traditional law and order candidate. And as you said, the FOP endorsed like true tough on crime candidate, and that race came in dead last with less than 10% of the vote share. But say a little bit about Philadelphia and what was going on there, because it was an interesting contrast to what we just saw the month before in Chicago. And, you know, I think trying to understand and sort of make meaning of, is there a common thread between the outcome that we saw in Chicago versus Philadelphia?
Yeah. And it's kind of fun because Anna and I are like ghosts of each other, because we did the race and she did the IE, or the independent polling for you. We did the independent polling for you and she did the race in Philly. So it's kind of fun to get both of our perspectives. But I think it was really great that Vera did some election eve polling, because in both Chicago and Philadelphia, the conventional wisdom was wrong. It was not a complete understanding of the race. And even what attributed to the victory was wrong. But I can speak to your polling on what really mattered to voters and what perspective on election day were they taking to the polls. And people in Philadelphia did think crime was a serious issue, overwhelmingly. And they also took a safety perspective on crime. Like Chicago, they were very, very interested in both the citywide concern and their own neighborhood concerns. It reached in even more into constituencies of color than it did into white constituencies. The number one constituency in Chicago that was concerned about crime was actually Latino voters, and they increased over the course of the election. In Philadelphia, you saw voters of color more concerned about crime and safety than the white voters. But they also had a very broad sense. Nobody said, okay, what do you mean by crime? And that's what I think is one of the major contributions that Vera's polling has made. And in both cities, what you saw is people said illegal guns, number one. They said street crime. They said hate crimes. They said carjacking. They said sexual assault and domestic violence, illegal drug use. In Chicago, they said violence intervention. So crime isn't just one thing to people. It's a big bucket. And that's one of the reasons why they want a 360-degree view of it. They also rated, we asked people in Philadelphia, how important is it? And people said the number one thing that was important is dealing with the root causes of crime. 84% of people said that was very important. Safe communities, 84%. Public education, 84%. Guns, 82%. Dealing with the drivers of crime, 81%. Then came up the traditional kind of crime response. So even when people were volunteering and rating what they thought was most important, rated all of these factors actually ahead of the toughness on crime. Toughness on crime and police, obviously important, but the other things even more important. And then I think the really powerful thing that Vera developed was this looking at the two positions on crime with and without the candidates named. And when we pose the prevention candidate and the safety candidate against the tough on crime candidate, using the language of the candidates, the safety prevention beat the tough on crime candidate 50% to 38%. And that included non-policing alternatives, focus on violent and urgent situations, crisis response, mental health, get illegal guns off, deal with the root causes. In both cases, there was a crime component, but there was a 360-degree view, a short-term perspective and a long-term perspective. Even when we took the candidate names off, and Sherrill Parker was ahead in the race at the time, and we attached to the candidates these positions, it was basically a tie in the race, even though people were at that point electing Parker. So I think that is a really, really powerful and creative experiment. And I really congratulate you and Anna for developing that in the Chicago race. But I think it's one of the most definitive tasks of how do these messages face up against each other in the heat of battle on the eve of the elections, whether the candidate is winning or losing, and after literally millions of dollars have been spent on advertising.
Well, I think you're raising such a good point that the winning candidate is really the safety candidate, who's associated with being strongest on safety, most serious about safety. But there's a new normal that isn't tough on crime. And I want to ask you about New York, because New York was, the big exception to this trend that we are talking about that we saw in 2022 and sort of continuing into 2023. So what happened in New York? You polled extensively and I think have some really good insights into sure. What does that mean for 2024, where the five House seats there are going to be some of the top races watched in the country around this issue.
I think we have to acknowledge that crime played out in a different way in New York than other places. A lot of that has to do with the cash bail issue and how that played out politically in the state as a whole and in New York City, and how it got talked about in the mayor's race in New York City. And so those issues that really are almost as much policy issues as they are issues of, like, I personally feel unsafe in my neighborhood, right? So it was much more of an ideological fight in New York than it was in other places, if that makes sense. Okay. And so I think that New York was different. That being said, I also think you can overemphasize how much crime was the driver of Democratic losses there. Long Island has been trending more Republican. And if you go back to 2021, for example, there was a lot of focus on what happened in Virginia, but not much focus on what happened in New York and Long Island, where Democrats lost county exec races and legislative seats. And so the red shift that everyone thought we were going to see in 2022 kind of happened in 2021. And that was true in New York. And that, you know, was not as much sort of a crime election. And then the other piece was that, as you all know, the redistricting was controversial in New York, and the ultimate map was not favorable towards Democrats. And so a lot of these districts on Long Island were pretty significantly redrawn and much tougher for Democrats to win. And then the third piece that's different about New York is that New York City media market is brutal. So, you know, it is very difficult to have the resources to actually communicate. Most congressional races don't go on broadcast, and most independent expenditure campaigns will go on for a couple of weeks. And so there's not very much communication that reaches these congressional races in the New York districts that are in the New York City media market. And so the kind of dominant narrative around, you know, these ideological fights around crime and bail, you know, are there without a lot of counter from a back and forth between the candidates, because it's extremely difficult for people to communicate in those races. And so, again, I don't want to suggest crime had no role in New York. It certainly did. But it's much more nuanced than Democrats lost because of crime in New York.
I want to note something too. There's an interesting counterpoint story happening in Illinois that also passed bail reform in 2021. And just during last year's election season, something around $40 million were spent fear-mongering around the Pretrial Safety Act, which is Illinois' version of bail reform. What Illinois Democrats did on the campaign trail differently than New York Democrats, and I'm based in New York, I saw this firsthand. Illinois Democrats, from Governor Pritzker on down to state legislators, defended bail reform. They talked about it at every turn. They said, and we're concerned about crime. You blame the wrong causes. You miss the right solutions. Rolling back bail reform is not going to address our gun violence problem or other problems. Let's actually talk about the right solutions for those concerns about crime. And what we saw is, first of all, everybody won re-election. But second of all, there was a poll that came out of Illinoisian voters, and 60% felt favorable or neutral towards bail reform in Illinois after the campaign season, compared to in New York, where we watched Democrats in general sort of pivot away from talking about bail reform or renege their support for bail reform. And what we saw is public support for bail reform plummeted since it passed to now it's under about 30%. So you wonder about the role of what politicians decide to do in the face of a big policy change and how they actually manage the backlash. So I want to ask one more question about policing, because both of you mentioned support for police and how to talk about police. I think one thing we have seen loud and clear is there needs to be some conversation about the police and the role of police. And so I would love to hear from both of you if you have a takeaway or a race in which we have lessons learned specifically about policing moving into 2024.
In a number of races, we dealt with policing. We did the Lincoln mayoral race and the Chicago mayoral race, where the FLP endorsed our opponent. It was prominent in our opponent's ads. In fact, in Lincoln, they were the number one endorser and the number one source on the ads, and personally appeared on the ground in really grassroots effort. And I think what's really interesting is in both places, people felt negative about FOP, but positive about police. But people also realize things need to change. There are three things that are quite prominent in the police narrative. One, people want to support the police. Number two, they want the police to change. And they think that would be good for the police and good for safety. And they want much more accountability with police. And then increasingly, people, and the younger you are, the more you feel this way, believe that police aren't the best people to send to any situation, or police should be coupled a lot of time with another kind of violence intervention, a mental health expert, a social worker, an addiction or substance abuse person. People have a lot of appetite for policing, but they have a lot of appetite for coupling it with other things. And then the last thing I would say is people invariably see policing as the short-term solution, not the long-term solution. The long-term solution is what we've talked about: guns, mental health, violence intervention, youth, invest in education and jobs. And often our politicians can't walk and chew gum at the same time, but voters can, and particularly women voters, who are some of the most subject to this safety narrative. They want to be safe. They feel more vulnerable, but they also think we have to be able to walk and chew gum at the same time. We have to do both of these approaches.
I agree with everything that Linda said about kind of messaging going forward. But one thing I would just want to put out there, and I don't necessarily think it's well developed yet, is figuring out how the gun debate fits into this going into 2024. Mm-hmm. I think the country's in a different place around guns and gun violence. And it's not just because of the mass shootings. That's definitely part of it. But I think that we've seen a change in opinion. We've always had very high levels of people support background checks, and actually the vast majority of people support an assault weapon ban. And so people are actually more, would like to do more to control guns and gun violence than you might believe. But I think that's a huge part of the crime narrative, especially for voters of color. And I think it's something that can be addressed at the local, state, and federal level, notwithstanding the Supreme Court. And so I think that this is something that Democrats and progressives need to kind of figure out how that issue becomes a part of our overall message on crime. I think it'd be very powerful.
Yeah. Anna, that's a great way to segue to opening it up to our audience to see what questions, reactions, reflections do you have. Mel, please jump in.
Hey there. You talked about women candidates being more vulnerable to attacks on crime, being soft on crime. Are there any races coming up in particular where you expect to see this dynamic?
Oh boy, that's a really good question. I would expect we're going to see every senator packed for being soft on crime. And we have a lot of women running. Again, I think that one of the lessons of 2023 is actually where crime played out more in the races, in these prosecutor races, in these DA races, in these mayoral races, because people do think their mayor has something to do with crime. I think these attacks fell somewhat short in the Senate races because people don't think of their senator as solving crime. But I think you'll see it play out in the Senate races, particularly because we are running a large number of women. And I think you'll see it play out in Nevada for sure because of the Latino vote there. I think you'll see it play out wherever we have a vulnerable woman candidate or person of color running.
Yeah, I would just look for executive races. Gubernatorial, mayoral, there are fewer mayoral in the presidential year, but I think those executive races are the ones where how that executive handled crime or would handle crime could play a bigger role than federal races.
Yeah, I'll just add that I think there are two races I'm particularly curious of how dynamics of gender and race will play out. The first is in Houston. There's a mayoral election this fall, and Sylvester Turner, the current mayor, is not running again. But the two front runners, one is a white man who's a longtime sort of fixture of Democratic politics, but seen as very tough on crime, who's currently a state senator, John Whitmire. And the other is Sheila Jackson Lee, who is currently in Congress and is a Black woman running for mayor. And crime and public safety has been a huge issue now for years in Houston, Harris County. So I think that that's one race. And the other is the U.S. Senate race in Michigan next year, where Alyssa Slotkin is running for U.S. Senate. And Michigan is, again, a place where we've seen a lot of recent change in terms of the composition of state legislature and where voters are moving on issues of crime and safety. Karen, please jump in with a question.
Sure. I was just wondering, to what degree are Democrats kind of digging out of, you know, sort of political malpractice in some areas? I mean, I think it's pretty well recognized that the slogan "defund the police" was not exactly beneficial politically. You see the DC crime bill and how that played out, you know, interestingly enough, with a significant number of Democrats joining the Republicans on that one, the president pivoting on that one. But to what degree are Democrats sort of hamstrung by these mistakes? Have they moved beyond that, do you think?
Well, Karen, I would like to challenge your premise because the quote unquote defund movement, while a real phenomenon advocated by a very small number of activists, was not a Democratic platform. In fact, President Biden said, "I'm running to fund the police." And this was and I'm not suggesting it wasn't effective in some ways, but a Republican elevation of defund and suggesting that is the Democratic Party's position. And, you know, the vast majority of Democratic electeds said it was not their position. So I just wanted the premise that the Democrats have to dig themselves out of this hole that they created. This was a attack from the right. And I would
But you did have like Mandela Barnes, you know, having to deal with the fact that he was photographed with slogans like abolish ICE.
Sure. And he barely lost. Yeah. You know, I mean, he barely lost that race in a very, very white state, in a very tough state. You know, I would think for a statewide Black candidate. So the fact that he, as a Black candidate who had been photographed with those banners, barely losing, to me, I mean, I would say that was contested more than a massive, you know, I mean, we lost a seat. So in terms of the Senate, that makes a big difference. But if you actually look at the vote share, it actually was contested. So I get like a little bit, you know, with that premise that Democrats created themselves this problem because they're all for defund the police. And the other thing I would say is that defund the police is also a racial dog whistle. And so it is not, and it is the latest in a long line of racial dog whistles that the Republicans trot out. That being said, as Incha said, you know, at the very beginning, there's no question that you ask, who do you trust more on crime? People are more likely to say Republicans than Democrats, because that has been the historical perspective of who is sort of more likely to be in favor of tougher penalties or the like. It has not been the defining issue that Republicans want to be. So I think the challenge for Democrats is not so much digging out of the hole, it's being much more aggressive around the issue, being willing to speak up about it proudly and make it a part of what they talk about on a regular basis, as opposed to kind of running away from the issue or conceding it or only dealing with it when it comes up as an attack. I think that is the bigger issue, but it's going to take time. The perceptions of the parties don't change overnight, regardless of what parties actually do in any particular moment. And so it takes time. And I think that will happen as Democrats become more confident. And again, I would go back to the gun issue as a place where Republicans are profoundly out of step with where Americans are on guns and the role that guns are playing in the rise of violent crime. And I think this is a place where if Democrats would be more aggressive around guns as part of a crime message, I think we might see those numbers over time shift in a Democratic direction.
I would just add to that and develop Anna's thought a little bit more. I'm less convinced, Karen, that there was malpractice and we dug ourselves in a hole. I kind of share Anna's view of this. But I think I would warn the Democrats against is future malpractice, which we are perfectly capable of. And I think that comes in two forms. Number one, we should not let this set the agenda, particularly in congressional and Senate races. And even in like the Lincoln mayoral race. We responded on defund, and we also ran an ad contrasting on choice. And I would say that combination, it was key to the winning. And we were tied or slightly behind at one point in that race. So I think don't let them decide what the agenda is, particularly in federal races, because people's inclination, it's different from mayoral and prosecutorial races. Their inclination is not to make this the number one issue that they're voting on for their congressperson. The second thing I would say is we have now a proven roadmap for an aggressive response. And it's what Incha said. Lean in. Go after being tough on crime means being tough on the root causes of crime. It means some changes in what we've been doing. It means support for police, but it means alternatives to police and accountability for police. And it means looking at the long-term solutions of investing in education, investing in jobs. And if you put that message up every time we have polled, putting that message up either in the candidate polling or in Vera's post-election polling, that message against the traditional tough on crime message with the racial dog whistles, we win with the candidates named or without the candidates named. So we should not be ducking and hiding. We should be aggressive about our response, but not let this be defined as the only issue in the campaign.
And I'll just name one more thing is Vera Action, our 501c4, did a lot of battleground research after the 2022 elections, including in places like Wisconsin. And what we found is for Democratic and independent and moderate voters, the defund dog whistle actually didn't have much potency. Only 13% of those voters actually thought it was a legitimate attack. The other 87% thought it was just part of election cycle rhetoric. I think that's an important finding for Democrats and other politicians to, you know, question the potency of those attacks. Mel, the floor is yours.
I just wanted to follow up on your comments about Hispanic voters. You mentioned Nevada, and you also mentioned Hispanic women being more vulnerable to tough on crime, Republican messaging. Can you talk about some curiosities you have about these voters and just dynamics you're looking out for when it comes to this particular group?
Well, I would say two things. Number one, and it's not just Latinas, it's Latino men too who are vulnerable to the soft on crime attacks. I think number one, we should not treat all people of color as monolithic. And number two, it's very often people of color who are more concerned about the crime narrative, particularly in these municipal races, than white voters are in these cities. And for understandable reasons in terms of neighborhood crime, the gun violence that Anna has been repeatedly raising. But what we have seen across the polling is African-American voters are much more nuanced on crime and policing than sometimes we would think. And they really, really respond to the 360 degree view, tough on crime, tough on the root causes of crime. But they also, they get right away, this is a dog whistle, this is a political attack. Latino voters in the places that we've polled, Allegheny County, Chicago in particular, Philadelphia, Lincoln, they tend to respond the most to the attacks. And they will increase, they will pull away from the candidate. They will increase in their saliency that they attribute to the crime issue. And they're the audience where it's really particularly important to respond. Now, they are very anti-guns in schools, for example. Latinas are extremely concerned about that. And Anna is a real expert on that polling. They are very concerned about root causes in terms of education and school shootings and hate crimes. They are very concerned about jobs, which they think as a real anecdote to crime. So again, this prevention safety narrative, this root causes of crime narrative is very, very strong, but you have to really push it out in the Latino community because these attacks often catch on more there than a lot of other places.
Well, that is a great and smart note to end on. And thank you so much, Celinda and Anna, for sharing your wisdom. And thank you to all of you for joining for this conversation. You can follow up with any of us directly if you have more questions or want to take the conversation offline. And we really appreciate you being here today.